You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and as we begin to close out 2021 this year, I asked my guest today to reflect on the most important stories in the state of Illinois over the past year and to look ahead to some of the key topics our listeners should be looking for up in the in 2022, our upcoming year. To do this, I asked a veteran reporter and columnist who knows his way around the corridors of power in our state and who isn't afraid to ask tough questions. He combines some really good analysis as a columnist with old-fashioned shoe-leather reporting, which is why I really respect his work. The other thing I really like is if you've read his columns, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have, you'll know he isn't shy about sharing his ideological lean, but that doesn't get in the way of his reporting and analysis, which I feel is pretty down the middle, and which I appreciate in these polarized times. As I said, a lot of listeners will recognize his name. That's because he's from our region. He's worked in our region as a reporter in the past. He's Scott Reeder, who produces a column that appears statewide and also regularly in the Dispatch and Quad City Times. Scott, thank you for being on.
Great to be here.
Well, I appreciate you doing this for me. I think, and for our listeners, I think it's a good way to wrap up the year. But and you're a very good person qualified to do this. But what do you think, looking back on 2021, were our top, say, five issues that impacted our state?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, I always feel a little bit arrogant as reporters do that. You know, like, here are the five the most important things that happened in your life in 2021. It's like, well, you know, I'm just writing about the news. I don't always have the best perspective on what is really happening. So I was at Kiwanis today eating lunch, and I said to my table mates, what do you guys think are the top five things? And so with a little input from me, here are some things that that were brought up that I think are significant. Obviously, number one is COVID. That it was a huge issue, and how Illinois dealt with COVID compared to other states is important as well. I think you want me to go through the whole list, or you want to go one by one and discuss them?
Let's just go one by one, and because I think there'll be a lot that you'll have to say, and I might follow up a little bit here as well.
Okay. So we have COVID. I think Governor Pritzker showed some real leadership during the difficult time. As you know, I'm sometimes very critical of the governor, but I will say this. He did not waver. He did not give out what I consider, compared to President Trump, I think that he really has shown some leadership here. Now, does that mean I agree with everything he has done in the area of COVID? No. But I think he has decided to take some action, and I think he hasn't politicized the virus, which I think is good. Let's see. Well, I just walk through the rest of the list and then go back.
Sure.
I think we have the federal spending for COVID, as far as, you know, trying to boost the economy with the stimulus package and everything. I think the untold story that's going to have lasting impact in Illinois is what Illinois did with that money. Instead of trying to get their fiscal house in order, because, you know, we're the worst state as far as our finances, they increased spending and increased programs. And next year, when there's no money coming from the federal government, how are we going to fund these ongoing programs? Nobody's answering those type of questions, and it really needs to get addressed. And, you know, this is kind of an ongoing problem in Illinois as far as we'll create programs, and we maybe have the funding money for them for 1 year, but then the next year there's an expectation this will be an ongoing program, but we don't have the funding source. So I think it's one of the things that's it hasn't really been widely reported on, but should be. I think that the map drawn for Congress is significant, but related to the map, I think, is the loss of population. Suddenly, for the first time in Illinois' history, we're losing people. And we're not losing people universally across the state. The area that we're losing people the most is downstate. Some suburbs are growing, but overall, people are leaving the Illinois for a variety of reasons, and I think that that's significant. And when people say, what's the weather? Just look at Indiana and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa. All those states are growing, and their weather's as crappy or crappier than ours. So, you know, I don't think it's that. I think that we have, obviously, criminal justice reform is high on the list of things that the legislature accomplished this year. And related to that, I think we have to look at what's happening, particularly in Chicago, particularly in the inner city, as far as urban violence and the out-of-control homicide rate there. I mean, so I think those are the big stories for Illinois for this year.
Okay. So let me just review them here, and we'll talk about them a little more. First, number one is COVID and the governor's response. Secondly is the federal money that was brought into Illinois that the state used, and questions about whether the funding is going to be sustainable down the road. Third is the legislative remap, and especially, as you mentioned, the loss of population. We lost one congressional seat in Illinois. Four is the criminal justice reform program that was passed by the General Assembly, signed by the governor. It's been the topic on several guests of this show over the year, very controversial. And five is Chicago and the violence downtown, which we keep reading about in different ways. Those are the five issues. And I guess I want to go back and my first question on COVID is, do you get a sense in the folks you talk to, are people, you know, Illinois is a blue state. We've been, as you mentioned, we've been a little more going with masks and pushing vaccines more than some of the red states. Part of our partisan divide, we can't even agree on public health issues. But you sense there's getting to be a tiredness of this, that we're really ready to move on? And do you see any chance that if any of the new variants are serious, that they're going to shut that things down again? Or do you think that's there's just too big of a risk for civil disobedience and nobody following those?
It's interesting to use the word civil disobedience. I have witnessed, you know, I live in downstate Illinois, as you do, and we continually less and less observance of mask mandates, and more interestingly enough, less and less, not just by customers, but retailers and restaurants just flat out refusing to enforce it. You know, like, this isn't our job. We're just going to ignore it. I mean, and, you know, I wear my mask when I go shopping, not just because I think it's a good health reason, but also I think it's, you know, it's the law. And, you know, and we should obey the law. And I walked into my local IGA here in Riverton, Illinois, outside of Springfield. All the employees were wearing masks. The customers were wearing masks. The only two people that weren't wearing masks in that store were two Riverton police officers wandering around. I'm like, yes, there is some fatigue going on here. But I think that tells you something about the level of enforcement that's going on as far as people getting people to abide by the rules. I mean, these two cops didn't feel any compunction to wear a mask, and I go to other places, and I'll see no one wearing a mask. So it's very inconsistent, what I see.
A lot of people would say that the criminal violence, criminal justice reform bill is directly related to the violence outbreak in Chicago. Murders are headed for a record. I think they just surpassed 1,000 and they're approaching the all-time record, I believe. And of course, you've had these incidents where people just breaking into shops and stealing things. A lot of folks, some of my guests during the year, I had people that supported it, but I had people that were saying, predicting that things like this were going to happen. Are those two things related? Do you think the violence is partly related to some of the provisions in this bill?
I think that the same things that caused the violence are the same things that sparked this bill. I don't know if I would say the violence and the bill are related. I think what we saw after the death of George Floyd is a lot of urban unrest, and that was sparked by that injustice that we saw happen there in Minneapolis. But I also saw, I think we saw a reaction on the left to be more progressive and look for other alternatives to law enforcement. And some of these ideas they came up with, I think, are very positive. Some of the ideas they have come up with, we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's very unfair to blame criminal justice reform on the ongoing riots, because most of those bills haven't passed yet. I mean, they've been signed, but they don't go into effect until later and until the end of the year. And so, what we're witnessing right now is unrelated in that sense to what's happened in Springfield. Now, a lot of prosecutors, a lot of judges are worried about what they're going to do next year when they have eliminated cash bond, and how are we going to handle this? You either say stay or go from the prison, from the jail while you're waiting trial, and it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, because the argument goes, if you are a wealthy person and you're accused of committing a crime, you can post the cash and be released from jail until the trial comes. If you're a poor person accused of committing a crime, you're being held in jail just because you don't have the cash to meet the bond. The idea is, why don't we have a level playing field and let's let the judge evaluate whether you are, it's safe for you to return to society and not worry so much about having somebody post a cash bond on there. Now,
you're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and our guest today is Scott Reeder, who's been discussing, at my invitation, the top five issues of 2021, our current year as we come to a close. And we've been talking about that here for the past 13 minutes or so. And now he's going to switch his focus to what he sees as the issues upcoming in 2022 for our listeners to kind of keep an eye on, and sharing his thoughts on that. Again, I'm very grateful to him for taking the time to do this. It's kind of a year-end thing, and he's perfectly situated to do that as a reporter with extensive experience in Illinois politics and somebody who's from our region and knows our region very well. So, Scott, I'm going to turn it over to you just to go down your list of your five issues that our listeners should watch for as being most important in Illinois in 2022.
Well, the first one is easy. It's the election, it's the election, it's the election. I mean, 2022 is going to be an election year. There's a lot of variables here. I personally think that it's going to be a very good year for Republicans nationally. I haven't heard any political prognosticators say Republicans aren't going into this one with an edge. I wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those once-in-a-generation big turnovers like we saw in 1994 when I was a young reporter and Newt Gingrich came to the forefront and Republicans suddenly controlled the House of Representatives for the first time in many, many years. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that happen on a national level, which raises the question of how does that affect Illinois? My personal opinion is the maps are drawn up so tight that we're not going to see a lot of variance in the House and the Senate in Illinois. Now, the governor's race is another deal because it's a statewide election. You can't gerrymander a statewide election. These are two big ifs. If the Republican Party is capable of nominating an electable candidate, and that candidate can be adequately funded, I think Governor Pritzker is very vulnerable in this year. So those are two huge ifs. Republicans tend to veer far right in primaries and nominate candidates that just aren't palatable to middle-of-the-road voters. So those are some questions to look at. We also have Ken Griffin, the richest man in Illinois, saying that he will help finance whoever the Republican nominee is, and there seems to be a public conflict between him and Governor Pritzker. So I wouldn't be surprised if these candidates, a candidate coming in here, could run a pretty viable race. I think we another issue to look at is the no cash bail in Illinois. The idea is, I think, a progressive one, an interesting one. The idea is, like, if I commit a crime and I'm a millionaire and I'm awaiting trial, the judge can post $500,000 bail, a bond, and I can pay that money and go home. But let's say I'm a meat packer in Monmouth, Illinois, and I get charged with a crime. I'm probably not going to have the money to get bonded out before the trial, and I'm not going to be able to work and support my family during that period. And it's a very difficult situation. And some people will say that's really unfair because you're basing it on money rather than on other things, decide whether somebody was in or out of prison awaiting trial. So they've made it so it's the judge that will decide, not based on money posted or anything else, whether you're a flight risk, whether you're a dangerous community, those sort of things, and deciding whether you will be in or out of jail before trial. And from the judges I've talked to so far in Illinois, there's a lot of concern about this, and prosecutors, because nobody knows exactly what the ground rules are, how this is going to be implemented, if it's going to be a smooth transition or not. So that could very easily be a big issue. I think that the continued urban violence in Chicago is going to be something that's going to take a lot of oxygen out of the room for Illinois politics in general, and I think that we're going to see a lot of division in the state on how the best way to approach this is. The demise of local newspapers is a very underreported stuff story, but I think it's going to be a growing story in 2022 because, you know, newspapers nationwide are really hurting, and lots of newspapers are closed, lots of newspapers have merged, and I think that we're going to see that trend's going to continue this next year. And, you know, the question that comes to mind is, if we don't have newspapers, who's going to report the news? I mean, most local TV stations are very have very small staff. I think that we're going to have to, there'll be a growing reevaluation of how we go about news, how we get our information, and how do we know if our information is accurate and valid. So I think that's going to be a huge issue. I think the ongoing federal probe of Commonwealth Edison and what role, if any, Mike Madigan played in getting a bid is going to continue, and ultimately the federal governments are going to have to decide whether somebody's going to be indicted or not, and I think it'll be fascinating to see if that happens with former Speaker Madigan or not, but nonetheless, that's a huge story either way. And the other issue that everybody's talking about, but nobody knows how it's going to impact it, is abortion. For the last 48 years, abortion has really been primarily a federal issue because, you know, the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade made it a constitutional right. So it took the issue out of places like Des Moines and Springfield and Indianapolis and made it a federal issue. Now, if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, which there appears to be a growing likelihood that that's going to be the case, in a lot of ways, they're going to return back to what things were pre-Roe Wade. You know, one of the misconceptions about that court decision is it legalized abortion. No, it did not. It made abortion a constitutional right, and there's a big difference. Before Roe Wade, there were four states where women could get an abortion on demand, without any questions asked, anything. I think New York was one, Alaska was one, I think California was in there, and I want to say Oregon, but I may be wrong there. It's been a while since I wrote that story. But then there were another 11 states that had limited abortion rights. I mean, but they could be provided. It wasn't as expansive as it is today. But
so
it's
just going to become a state's rights issue. Each state will get to
become a state's rights issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Most states, and you look at the states that were had it legal before Roe Wade and after Roe Wade, if Roe Wade gets overturned, they're going to be almost the same states except for one big exception. Illinois, during that period of last 48 years, has moved from being a very strong pro-life state to being a very strong pro-choice state. And a lot of reasons for that. I was talking to Jim Edgar last week. He said when he was in the legislature back in the, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s, that most of the pro-life people in the legislature were Democrats. And a lot of the pro-choice people in the legislature were Republicans. And he said that's completely changed over that period of time. And it's become much... Illinois has just the politics of it has just changed a lot, and how the political establishment approaches this issue. Historically, Illinois has been a transactional political state. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. The politicians thrive in an environment, you know, where there's pay to play, there's campaign contributions there. They're terrified of dealing with issues like abortion, where there's no compromise really there, and there's really no financial upside to the issue. I mean, there's no way. I mean, the parties involved are not contributing huge amounts of money. They're kind of contributing huge amounts of votes. This is a polarizing issue. So this is an issue that most politicians I know don't really like to address, but it's going back to the states' rights issue. So if it is overturned, as people anticipate, so it may be something that hangs over Illinois for a long time. I mean, I think that's something that we're going to really see. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, it becomes a states' rights issue, and we're going to see a lot of debates in every state capital in the nation on what the future is for it.
And the timeline for that looks like June, when that will be announced, and that's the time of the new primary calendar for Illinois.
Exactly.
That was pushed back, so it could still be an issue, probably will still be an issue in the primaries and then leading up to the November general election. So just to recap your five top stories for our listeners to watch for, of course, the election 2022, and right along with that is the issue we've just been talking about, the impact of abortion politics regardless, I think, of the Supreme Court decision, whether they uphold Roe v. Wade or not. I think that's going to be a big issue. I would agree with you. The decline of local newspapers, it's something a guest of mine talked about here about a month ago. I think that's interesting that was brought up, that could be something big next year to watch as well. The ongoing investigation, which I'm glad you brought that up because I'd almost forgotten about it, it's still ongoing, of ComEd that's involved former House Speaker and Democratic Party Chair Mike Madigan. We'll see what the new year brings on that. And the final issue was this no cash bail provision in the criminal justice reform bill, and House local states attorneys are going to be developing policies on that. And of course, that's linked, I guess, under the rubric of just perhaps continuing some of the continuing violence up in the Chicago area. So there you have it, folks. Kind of a recap on this year and then a look ahead to next year from somebody who knows, Scott Reeder, who's a veteran reporter and columnist with roots in the area and whose column is seen regularly by folks in the Quad Cities. It's in both papers. And Scott, thanks so much again for taking the time to do this. It wasn't perhaps an easy assignment because I know you write about a lot of different things and have a lot of different perspectives, but I appreciate you taking the time to bring all this together for us today.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.